development and audio streaming from WPRG Radio.
What?
That's right. All your technical questions answered step-by-step from a professional team.
So go to www.b2netsolutions.com or call them at 1-888-984-8338 and tell them Captain Jack sent you.
It is so hard finding the right salon and the right stylist that the search itself is exhausting. Thankfully, I found Alice's Beauty Salon. The warm and inviting atmosphere and the friendly service really put a smile on my face. And they made me look my best as well. They listened to what I wanted and I walked out looking fabulous. So if you're looking for a new salon, a new stylist, give Alice's Beauty Salon a try. Give them a call today at 425-996-8846. That's 425-996-8846.
The internet puts the world at our fingertips, but it can be a very dangerous place, especially for children. I'm Dean Sparks, Director of Children's Services. The internet is just another door into your home. You wouldn't let a stranger walk through your front door, but ask yourself, who might my child be letting into the house through the computer? Here's what you can do. Teach your kids not to share personal information online. Educate yourself about internet parental controls and have your kids show you their favorite websites. Be aware that they could also be surfing the web at the library or a friend's house. Put your computer in a place where you can monitor your children while they use it. Ask yourself, does your child spend a lot of time online late at night or change the screen quickly when you walk into the room? Are there calls from people you don't know, suspicious telephone charges, or unexplained gifts? Remember, if your child is online, you should be on guard. I'm Dean Sparks. For more on what parents should know, visit us on the web at lucaskids.com.
Chicago, 104.1 in St. Louis, and also our affiliate out there in Seattle, 106.9 KRWM HD3, brought to you by the Contact Talk Radio Network on Friday nights. And every single one of our broadcasts are brought to you by B2Net Solutions. So, and really, if you if you're looking for a website hosting that's you know, not going to nickel and dime you to death and is really going to offer some great service, believe me, B2Net is definitely the way to go. And I'm not just saying that because they're our sponsor. We've used them for a long time before they were ever a sponsor of ours. So, at any rate, let's get right into it. My guest tonight, John Hutchinson from the Hutchinson Effect. He's got a lot of great stuff, and I talked about it a little bit here at the beginning of the program, and I don't think that I put it just right. So we're going to let John actually explain it to you. So, John, welcome to the program.
Why, thank you, kind sir. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing peachy with a touch of keen. Yeah.
That sounds good. Same here, I guess.
All right, so tell me a little bit about you. I mean, paint the picture of your background. How did all this start?
You got a big mural? a lot of painting here. I started this actually, but I was discovered by Alex Pizarro and George Hathaway in 1980, roughly about that time when I was doing experiments in the old Tesla technologies and other strange, unique technologies turn of the century. And what I was doing by accident and was causing huge levitation effects and other strange effects, such as metal turning into soft, mushy material. And many other strange things, such as strange lights appearing in midair, and background radiation was dropping down a little bit during some of the early tests. And what else did I do here?
Let me just ask you this. How did you get to the point to where you started experimenting with this stuff? Did you just wake up one day and decide, well, I'm going to, you know, I found this information and it's out there and I'm going to run with it? I mean, how did that start?
Well, actually started by my interest in old engineering and electrical engineering and reading a lot of books about it and replicating a lot of the old machines of the time. Plus, Vancouver had a lot of lots of surplus from turn of the century, too.
Yeah.
Electrical machines. So I built this, all these different configurations of those machines replicated and other machines, and found that there was some unusual things that happened. I didn't think much of it at the time, really, to be honest. I thought it was just some kind of a strange effect. So what? But it took Hathaway and Zero quite a while to inform me that these are very important effects, such as levitating away from the machinery, different types of objects of any weight, material, as well as metal, and sometimes water and other strange things happen. And so they were quite serious about it and presented it to the U.S. Pentagon in, I think, 82, just after SAIC group came and looked it over. I think it's them. I don't know. It was, they call them at that time, the San Diego Laser people. But they came, Washington State University came, as well as many others, the president of Hypotronics in Brewster, New York. And then it's decided that George Hathaway and Pizarro would give a presentation to the U.S. Pentagon, and then they brought in Colonel John B. Alexander and Los Alamos, as well as Naval Research Labs, to do a four-month show-and-tell held in Vancouver.
And let me see if I got this right, though. I believe that, you know, I heard about this long ago. At one point, you were levitating cannonballs. Is that correct?
Well, cannonballs were one thing amongst many other things, such as very heavy transformers was another thing. Chunk of steel, metal, have water mains and that kind of thing. It must affect the metal, and then the water main would explode and cause problems with that. And so that started there, and way back when, and actually most recently too. But anyway, that's another try and keep on track here. So that happened, and U.S. Army people, because it didn't happen in the target area, then wrote it off. This is real. Let's basically study it a little more. And one gentleman said, well, it didn't make it into the scientific community, good luck, and that kind of thing. So John Alexander, actually, he brought in another team from McDonnell Douglas Aerospace, where they didn't classify it, but they whitewashed it, protection whitewash, calling it poltergeist effects. Yeah, PK types of energy. So by doing that, writing up a report like that, it can be allowed out in the public domain.
Right.
Later on, of course, I was doing demonstrations for the news service up here, CTV and CBC News, and plus a bunch of other ones. And then the Canadian government got involved, and they filmed a lot of stuff, and then they put it aside as a matter of national security issue. And from then on, I went into another group from Boeing, the Boeing Corporation, and we worked on many different levels of strange and weird and wonderful effects.
Let's change gears for a moment, because we got the general outline. I mean, you can cause things to levitate. Now, how does this work? Is it on a platform? Is that what it is? And you put it on the platform, turn on the machinery, and then it levitates, or
try to get a good target area so people can observe it and film it. Uh-huh. That's the main thing, which they do. And however, the field will wander off course, maybe up to 10 city square blocks, causing havoc with residents, especially around here in the latest adventures I've been having here with it. Uh-huh. But the Los Alamos team measured it up to about 300 feet away from the laboratory. The one that they set up down in up here in Vancouver, on 41 River.
So you can turn this thing on, and you you can't like focus it in on one object. You turn it on, and just about anything within a particular radius, not a determined radius, can suddenly levitating, or several things can levitate, or how does that work?
Well, normally it starts to levitate objects at unknown distance and unknown height.
Mm-hmm.
It's been written up by René Louis Vallée of France and Andrew Sakharov as a cylinder of unknown height, roughly maybe about 3 feet in diameter or more.
Mm-hmm.
That was an early scientific document that was written up for the U.S. Army intelligent people. And so it does that. It seems to go through any kind of material, through walls or concrete, and that to affect objects. And sometimes it'll go on, like I'm in an area, like I had the lab taken away, that's another story, but in the last years here, it affected so many residents in this realm here in New Westminster. It became a pain, well, a real pain for the mayor of New Westminster and the crew there in City Hall, so there's an order to stop it, kind of thing.
Hmm.
Which I understand, of course. I mean, it's unknown, uncharted territory.
Right. So with all these different agencies getting involved and governments, what became of that? I mean, this would seem to me that this would be some technology that they could actually really start expanding on. Did they? I mean, did they, you know, I'm not sure how to present that question. I mean, did they do anything with what you started?
Well, actually, from whispers and comments from different scientists and executives of Lockheed Martin, Skunk Works, and others, they have done something with it,
yeah.
But they're not talking about it too much. And most recently, I was invited to work at the U.S. Pentagon through Major Peter Gerritsen, uh-huh. the Air Force Division, and because they showed the films in there, uh-huh. and I got a standing ovation. And I turned down the offer, unfortunately, but I think because I really don't like to fit into that 9-to-5 work issue.
Right.
And I don't like being like quiet and secret about it. I'm more or less on a buoyant side of things where I like to demonstrate it to National Geographic TV and Film or Discovery Channel or Fox or whoever is coming in here that like to see it. I guess probably have done about 100 so for television
right.
shows.
Yeah, you definitely wouldn't be able to do that working for them. They definitely
No. I refused to sign one of the contracts. I was working with the Canadian government. It was just too tough to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be able to talk about what I was doing. So I said to friends, Hathaway and crew, I said, no, I can't sign this.
Well, if okay, let's say they're very interested in it. They want to work with you on this. They have to be, and of course it's going to come down to a matter of national security.
Yes, actually I have. Japan, Austria, and Germany, as well as a brief contact with the Arabs. Iraq, I think it was some years ago. And I just said, no, I'm not interested in anything over in Iraq or any of that area. the German folks have an extensive analysis on this, and they also built another laboratory in Hiroshima. It's known as the Hiroshima Laboratory, for gigantic Tesla coils and that kind of thing. So a lot of work was done by those countries.
Right. And that's a good key factor, right? I mean, a lot of this has kind of, I mean, it's kind of a mixture of not only the Tesla's technology, some of his experiments, but others, right?
Well, very much so. Electrostatics and other scientists, and Orsted, Weber, all those great old timers have discovered many aspects of unique areas, effects in their sciences at that time. This is just a chance discovery, by the way, and promoted by Ferris Technologies, which is George Hathaway. And if they didn't do anything with that, I probably would have been on another path on some other crazy place or something. I don't know.
Life is crazy itself. So why not, right?
Yeah.
So this is something that you said, you know, if you put this with this and do it this way, you very well could have this effect. Let me try. Was it one of those deals, or was it more of wow, look what just happened?
It's kind of more like wow, look what just happened kind of thing. It's because I'm into engineering and machining and many, many things and replication stuff. I'm not a scientist at all.
Right.
And I'm like, I'll work on machine tools and design machine tools out of steel or unusual firearms or whatever. But then I got involved in this Tesla technology stuff and wanted to replicate the machines to the exact period in time. The proper wiring and the proper spacing, because these old timers knew what they were doing, and if I tried to deviate that and use modern something, wouldn't work. That's what I had. That's what I guessed. I mean, Ben Franklin was quite an interesting character in what he was doing. And I was incorporating a lot of interesting electrostatic design systems that would influence on the Tesla waves, which they do.
Yeah, well, you know, with Tesla's research, I mean, a lot of the stuff that he proposed, like, for one, his earthquake machine, that has been under an enormous amount of scrutiny for a very long time, and so it was actually proposed to the cable television show with Tesla. Could this actually be done? And so they tried to replicate his earthquake machine, and they took it out of the bridge, and set the right frequency and feels right there. It's just like a cylinder with moving these two little, this rod in a sense back and forth. A particular frequency, which frequency would start to resonate through the structure, which would cause the entire building or whatever to collapse. And you put it on this bridge, and they're out there for a long time, but it's so busted up. And then suddenly, they started to feel the vibration starting to resonate through this bridge, and they're like, this is kind of interesting here. It's kind of, you know, they postulated that if they left it on for long enough, that maybe it might have some serious effects. But the concept of it, of course, they had to, substitute some of the technology and some of the notes, because they just didn't have all the time or whatever. So, but it's very interesting that Tesla stuff really, really carries a lot of weight. And he claims some fantastic claims. How much of it was fantasy and how much of it was reality? Well, what you're telling us, this stuff to be used for interesting things like anti-gravity. Now, is it anti-gravity or what?
I feel it is anti-gravity. Like, anti-gravity can be explained also in the research into antimatter, because antimatter produces anti-gravity effects from the atomic. Yes. I mean, that's just an example, or shielding through ceramic materials. But this is, I think this really is an anti-gravitational effect that happens in a subatomic world.
And from what I know about about gravity so far is that so many believe that gravity is something that pulls us down to the planet, which in reality is something that pushes us down. It's a force pushing down instead of pulling down like a magnet. So how does that work? Does it just, I guess that's the main question. How does this happen? How does this work?
Well, basically, the gravity is made up of main sources, nuclear material. And if you take a tablespoon of that stuff, it weighs many tons and sinks to the center of the Earth. Well, why that is that there's an active particle, subatomic particle in there called a graviton. So you have a extreme high concentration of graviton that will, if enough of them, will actually form a black hole, punch out and go somewhere else into what they call a light hole. And in these experiments, of course, I think the actual gravitons are affected in some way that causes a sort of a shielding effect, because it takes the whole Earth to make something weigh something.
Yeah.
It's quite a... And I mean, also the old high school experiments where they used two large masses, round balls that were rotated around, and the two smaller balls would follow suit, would indicate that the graviton theory is probably the best theory today. Quantum physics.
Quantum physics is, it's a huge fascination in all of it, because everything that they say is possible and impossible is actually possible. It's in quantum physics, quantum is a very fancy word that everyone uses, and really, honestly, at the core level, it's nuclear physics, right?
Yes, and I think there's a very interesting aspect about, everybody's heard about The Secret, but I think it's a manipulation of mind into the quantum that goes out there, and intention put out, which is proved by, in some ways, Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, produces manifest with positive energy coming back, or negative, or whatever. So it's a very tricky and dangerous thing to play with in reality, right? It was a little bit that can amplify that through machinery, too.
All right, what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break here, actually, and we're going to actually reset the lines. I'm going to reboot the connection. I don't know why that is. So we're going to reset the lines here during the break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking with John about his experiments and some of the effects that he's been able to create, how it all came to be, and where it's all going. So stay right where you are. Don't go away. It's Paranormal Radio. I'm your host, Captain Jack. And that's the night, John Hutchinson. We shall return.
They are so reliable, they are the number one hosting solution on the net.
this information that John's relayed to us has a very close connection with some of the experiments that were done during the Philadelphia experiment. Is that correct?
Yes, in some ways. I haven't actually proved that yet. Now, we're working on a network show for Hawk Television. We're actually with my partner in crime, Ron Melaloni of Ghost Hunters. We're going to work together and do one heck of a demonstration on that aspect of it. Now, I've done some small demonstrations here in 2006 where I got some unusual results where water started to go into funny formations as well as lightning coming off of the model ship, which was about a foot long. And it was quite impressive, and I videoed it, of course. And we feel that we can do it. Ron and I consulted many times, and we feel we can do it. We throw grand finale of the Hutchison Fire TV show, which is in the works right now in Hollywood. And we have about 13 episodes to go through, which cover a vast variety of different topics, from levitation to free energy and also to time traveling and all kinds of neat stuff.
All right, let me just throw this out there real quick, because just before the break, we're having all this weird static coming through the line and kind of dropping out and coming back again. And you know, I'm always weird about the pulse, because it's completely quiet, it's making it a great pace. And one of our producers actually got an email saying that when we talked to you in the past, they've actually had this same effect. What they're hearing. So is this a common thing on your phone? Is there anything like this? Or?
Not normally. It could depend on weather conditions, maybe, because I've been on the 4 or 6 hour runs with other hosts. Art Bell and others, there didn't seem to be any problems. Yeah, I was just on one in Toronto. It seemed to go through okay. But I just don't know.
So if you're hearing that, drop it in the line of the road. Trust me, you're not going to be able to spend your time. So you're good on this side. So. Well, you know, this has been a very, very fascinating subject because we all have heard about, when I was growing up, we all were promised that from the year 2000 we would have these levitating cars, this free energy, and of course, four years ago. What is your thoughts on that? I mean, with these experiments that we've done, with this fascinating subject, what's your take on that? You have to have some sort of personal opinion.
Well, I think that, number one, the military industrial complex are having a lot of fun with this kind of technology to use in aircraft. And they have actually used some aspect of it in the stealth bomber, where they coated it with a high voltage direct current, gives it a little bit of an extra lift. And a lot of things have happened where the demand on the government have been like putting satellites up in the space all the time. It takes a lot of money too away from the main project. Now I was approached by Kennedy Space Center where they wanted to work with me. This was a couple of years ago, and what happened there is they were going to have a meeting about it, and they did. But the director felt, no, we've got to keep on track. We've got to keep following our commitments to our investors in the government and that kind of thing. So basically, that never took off. I was entertaining the idea, but I'm informed by various friends that it went into Black Ops. Area where money is used for interesting things. And I have friends in there, and they tell me little bits and pieces, but not everything they can't, because they would get in trouble. So.
Well, this side is, they've actually done this with submarines, have they not? Where they've generated an electric field on the submarines, they've actually propelled them through the water? Is that what you're talking about?
I believe, yeah, it's something that Lenny Louis Daly of France and Andrew Sakharov brought up, but and I have some documents on that somewhere that's never been actually translated.
Really?
And, yeah, oh yeah, I got some of that stuff stored somewhere. And, but he did mention in the letters to me pre-email time period about that kind of technology where they will go down deep and go very quiet. And they spread out that field and it just helps them move faster. Oh, yeah. What did he say?
Now, he said, he said that everything he had was taken.
Well, that was when I was in Europe in 1990. They made the front pages of the papers, and the equipment was all taken and hidden away in an area in Vancouver. But unfortunately, somebody found out about it and reported to the media. And because it was en route to Germany, but they didn't want to foreign in what I'm told, many different stories, that they didn't want to. Technology from North America going to Germany, and it almost turned into an international incident.
Right, because while you were in Germany, the people in Germany were going to help you get everything out of there, right? And you got all the stuff out of there, but not everything, and they required you to come back to Canada.
Well, they were trying to get me back to Canada and that kind of thing, but I refused to come back, of course, because I was so threatened to be arrested. Well, there was a friend, Electra Briggs, who covered the entire adventure with phoning all the people and recording it on recording. Tape and that kind of thing, and she has not revealed any of that stuff to me as yet, but it involved a lot of people. And unfortunately, you know, it's a big mess in the waste of energy, really. But that transpired, and the shipping containers were seized and opened up. And when I did return with the situation, no, my ex, I was with my ex, she's like brother and sister now, but at that time, she was a filmmaker and had a lot of input and everything, so, I returned here, she's working on her film on UFOs, it premiered on King Lane. However, I returned here, dealt with what was left over, and luckily I got the metal samples back, as well as an antique and modern firearms and oil, some test equipment, and I just decided to, what the heck, sell it all off and just go back to Europe, because the things that I'm always raided all the time, and it gets a little boring after a while. Like, I used to joke with a provincial ombudsman, is it time for me to leave the country yet? And he said, well, it seems like you've done it, so, I didn't do anything wrong, it's just, I don't know what the players are involved in all of that. Usually, if there's something happening that dramatic, the main upper guys, they turn quiet and disappear. I'm hoping that will happen so they know. So the funding won't get cut off, I guess. A good guess. I mean, that's a big, really high financing going on there. Oh, I've got a restricted mind. Okay. No, absolutely not. I'm on a regular dedicated landline. Okay, thank you.
We're going to get John repatched into the system. It is just really bizarre. I don't know what that is. The phone system has been fine. It's going weird. And we did. We got a very unusual email from one of the listeners out there who said they've had conversations with John too, but had the same kind of weird problem. So we're going to see if we can't clear that out. And, you know, if you're a regular listener to this program, you'll remember that we somehow wound up in a weird conference call with several different people that wound up with some guy in Iraq that was trying to call home his wife. Just weird things that can happen with the telecommunications, especially when it comes to internet-based telecommunications. So, let's see if we can't reset everything here. Jimmy's getting that good. And this is very irritating. Very irritating that nothing irritates me more than strange, weird connections. It just drives me insane. So, Jimmy looks like that. Now, this is a very fascinating subject, and honestly, John has a lot of information that he's bringing to the table. He's been doing this for a while. Now, did you catch what he said in the mix of all that? He mentioned time travel. So is that? Is that possible with some of the technology and some of the experiments that he's been doing? Well, we're going to find out. We'll talk a little bit about that here in a moment. Because if that is possible, I mean, I don't know, I'm kind of skeptical when it comes to that particular aspect, because I've gone enormous amount of paying attention with some of the top lines whenever it comes to time travel. So, I don't know, what are we going to find out with John's thoughts on that? Because, obviously, if this field, whatever it is he's being generated, is causing levitations of random objects, especially within a neighborhood. Could you imagine that? Could you imagine living next to John and having this happen? Well, it would be interesting, wouldn't it? Suddenly you have something levitating from you.
Hello?
Welcome back, John. I think we've got this clear out.
Okay.
Technology. It's about as weird as some of the anomalies that you've been experiencing with some of the experiments that you've been doing, isn't it?
I suppose so, in some regards.
So, alright, well, I was talking when you were up there when Jimmy was getting passed back in. You mentioned time travel in some of these experiments. Explain that. Is that possible, and do you have something that hints to you that this is possible with some of the stuff or whatever?
Well, actually, I do, because some of the metal samples that were analyzed by the Max Planck Institute indicated that they were changing and also accelerating in time. Like, you have a piece of stainless steel metal that actually starts to rust real fast and flakes and falls apart. Now, I'm thinking this is interesting because also I learned some years ago, four or five years ago at the South Pole, they discovered that during their tests with weather balloons and that kind of thing, their instruments would go up into this gray, funny-looking cloud, and when they pulled it back down, it went back to 1955 over and over again. And what happened was that this went directly to the White House. I don't know why it went there. I mean, they're just bureaucrats there, but decision makers, I guess. I thought it would go to some other agency, but that's what I'm told. And many emails and some of the different names of people from the Soviet Union, they're really into this stuff in the Soviet Union. So that was a lot of different Soviet scientist names and that. So that's another aspect that we want to cover in our network TV show, is to actually go to the South Pole and see if we can replicate anything like that.
Yeah, I remember that particular story. I remember that there was like a weird mist of fog or something. I don't know what this was. I don't know what this was. They actually had baby time. And I think if they were reporting the other day, they had come in and they were going back and they actually were. They were coming back and they were 65.
That's right.
And
that's the same thing I had.
What the hell is this? So I just said, is that really? Because of course that data couldn't be viewed. The baby time is on it. Something else is like the other time. It's something that's fog. They brought it back down and lo and behold, again, 1965.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Weird. And so you're saying that this went to the White House, this information?
That's what I'm told.
Yeah.
I guess decision makers in there, I suppose, sent it off to whatever laboratory for evaluation. But I don't know all the details on that, but that's true too. And also another incident in Booker Bay, Australia took place that in some ways was similar and well recorded. I have a copy of that report, and it was covered by Dr. Hal Pudoff, who I know, who's a friend, and Paul Devereaux, and this report was classified as sensitive and confidential, and it was brought to my attention by Mr. Harrington in Booker Bay, Australia. So that's another episode we'll be covering, because it resembles a Bermuda Triangle. However, they were able to capture a lot on Channel 4, as well as a lot of witnesses during these events, which were very dramatic and very striking. So there's a lot of intriguing things that happen in nature that a lot of people start to say, well, John can do these things in a small area. We don't have to go there and film this. So I get a lot of Bermuda Triangle people. And the most fun thing was they all got to come in. We were 6 months in production and made it work. Almost took out the building. Well, I was approached by Blue Bus Film. I worked with them before, and Bruce Burgess, the producer, said, John, I got a real project for you. Would you like to build, can you build the Ark of the Covenant? And I said, hey, this sounds like fun. I'm kind of known for the guys for doing the impossible things, like in engineering or whatever, strange stuff. So, okay, Bruce, let's go for it. So, Rod, he said, you have to get a team together in New Westminster here, which I did do. Custom woodworker, the metals from P&J Metals in Richmond. Had everything lined up, and we went to work. And, of course, our cameraman and director were filming a lot of work being done by Dan, the custom woodworker, and myself doing testing and that over quite a length of time. And the big, I guess you call it D-Day came, big day, where we took this out to friends of mine that own a metal, kind of like a metal supermarket, but their own metal warehouse around Christmas time. And Bruce phoned me up and said, John, this is the day, as well as Larry Barnett, phoned up saying the same thing at Blue Book Film. And actually, this was supposed to have been a big Hollywood production where I'd actually go to Egypt and test it there, but the budget was cut back a bit. So Bruce went off to Egypt and did his thing and interviewed a lot of people. Anyway, on the day of the big test, it did go off like, like there's no tomorrow. So an amazing amount of lightning bolts came out of this thing.
From what I understand, there's a lot of people out there that believe that the Ark of the Covenant was actually a giant capacitor in the center. It's a little arrow of capacitor that discharges electricity. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. We tried both areas, the putting a voltaic pile in there, but we could only reach about 100 volts. So we went into the electrostatic testing area and found that through that, there seemed to be a lot of power developed and collected in there, which would explode out, which is kind of unusual for that kind of thing, but it did happen.
You know, the story goes that people couldn't get near this thing because they would be stuck in. So was there a little bit of a worry?
No, I was in charge of all of that. I understand my voltages. I used to work around 10 million volts. And I understood the dangers and advised everybody to be very cautious. Things do not touch it. Don't stick too near it because it sparkles up and knock you to the ground kind of thing. So we tested it. We took pre-charge it with a Tesla coil to give it the ion memory effect to it. Pretty casey it would anyway. And this thing built up an amazing charge. And between the two cherubim, there was a gigantic arc formed. And this arc slowly got stranger and stranger, like white-colored, very bright light, like carbon arcs were running down the side of the cherubim into the wood, and the wood caught fire, and then the whole thing just kind of exploded in flames and electrical sparks. Where at that time, Rudy was filming every second of it as precious footage for Discovery Channel. And my other ex, Corinne, she was on standby with a fire extinguisher, and then she said she doesn't know how to work these things. And Rudy Fishman, our camera guy, pull the pin, point, shoot, hurry up, it's going, everything's going haywire here. So I backed away, and then Corinne pulled the pin, and boom, off went off the stuff, and then that. Poor Nigel was terrified. He thought it was Indiana Richard, Indiana Jones. He's going to lose his entire building for himself. So it was fantastic. We had a fantastic rap party after that. I felt like, wow, I didn't know I could do that. You know, I thought maybe nothing would happen. I'd be up the creek, but I was looking embarrassed on Discovery. No, I don't want that.
So you were a little, you were kind of stuck in the design.
Kind of, yeah. I give it my best shot, and normally I will achieve the goal.
That's how I kind of approach my projects. I go, well, this might work. Let's give it a try.
Exactly, you know. I like those challenges, especially in the film industry, because it's real, and there's no special effects. It's real stuff. That's the key issue. And to do it in front of an audience of people that are interested in stuff, it is a challenge.
Yeah, no, most definitely.
You don't want to fail.
Well, it didn't, because it sounded like you did. It sounded like you did. Well, actually, with it going down into the wood, I mean, using wood, I mean, what was it basically made of? Was it copper, gold, and wood, wasn't it?
Well, most of it's gold, and I don't know about copper, but we used acacia wood, which is an oily kind of wood, and a very good, strong dielectric. We used copper on the inside and outside, and the shapes are all nicely rounded, so there's no what they call corona discharge off of it. And I can imagine carrying it through the desert where it's very dry, and it'll build up this massive electrostatic charge. Well, actually, conditions were perfect because it was cold. There wasn't much dampness, humidity in the air. It was wintertime. So it worked fantastic. We had energy coming out of the thing, too, with the Rudy film. Yep, absolutely.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely. It was strange thing when we captured them and Rudy filmed them. They're like little elongated things that were moving in and around.
I'm swirling around all over the place in there.
Really?
I'm not kidding. No, Rudy, our producer has 52 hours of stuff. Of course, he brought it down to 1 hour for Discovery Channel Networks. It has not aired yet, but it's quite intriguing, and I wasn't observing that. More or less, others were watching that aspect. I was more concerned about, okay, there's energy there. Okay, you say that. I'm just concerned what's happening.
Yeah, exactly.
On the level to pull any kind of switches and take measures to deactivate the thing.
Sure,
so.
Sure. Oh, man.
I even said to Rudy, I said, should I just pull all the leads or... No, keep it, this is fantastic.
Keep rolling. Let it go.
Keep rolling. I know, it was fun. It was a lot of fun, that one.
So is there an air date on this, or is it still being on the cutting room table, or what's the deal?
Well, it's all prepared and ready to go on to Discovery Channel Networks. I'm not sure when it's going to air. It's been a couple of years now, but these things, sometimes they air right away, and sometimes it takes a couple of years from the air.
Right, yeah.
So it'll be kind of a show that I did last year that's supposed to air. Who knows when, but it was radio host Rob Simone,
mm-hmm.
who witnessed a HGH canister disappear and float in the air for about 20 minutes.
And
really cool stuff. That was all on tape.
That was there at your... You have pictures of that on your site, don't you? Is it when they were there filming?
Could have been, I don't know if it's Rob's Simone and Impact Motion Pictures.
Right.
But there's so many of them. I might have. No, I don't think I do with those guys.
Oh, okay.
I have National Geographic TV and Film.
I see.
Griffin Productions and also Blue Book Films plus a bunch of others. But.
All right, well, tell us about that. The canister.
Well... I was operating the controls in this side of the wall, and Rob Simone and hosts and TV people were filming in the active area, and they actually got this, or I did, I guess, this HGH canister started to go up in the air and just stayed there and started spinning. And then just simply, after 20 minutes, vanished.
Vanished, just dematerialized and gone.
It seemed to be. I couldn't find the thing. And so that was prior to me going off to Scottsdale for a while. Got married and divorced. That's another long story, but it's cool. I came back here, and Dr. Ludwig from Austria came over, and he spent 10 days filming the effects here in high definition. And after that, who else was here? Tom Sky, a friend of mine, was here filming also. But he got hit by the energy field, and it caused a major shockwave through New Westminster.
What do you mean?
Well, he felt this when he returned to Long Beach, California. He was going through some kind of distortion effects. And he was really concerned, and he was he wanted me to contact Steven Seagal, which I did. He's an actor friend of mine, and he was, Stephen was on his way over to Poland at the time, and just had too many things on his plate to deal with it, so he's interviewed by Ken Shoulders, another U.S. scientist. Ken knows Stephen as well as Hal Pudoff knows Stephen.
Right.
So, in getting him help... And I believe he was writing to a casual friend of mine, Paris Hilton, who wrote him a long email back for advice on whatever. And so Tom, I feel, has fully recovered from this incident here.
All right, so he was there at your laboratory.
Yes, he was.
And you were doing this experiment, and he got hit with this... field, because you can't focus it to a specific area. Wherever it shows up in a sense, and it just happened to show up, and he got hit by it, and then felt physical effects resonating with him for days after. Is that right?
Actually, for quite a while after. Now, I send out emails back. We used to email each other back and forth, and I found out that not only him, but there's other folks in New West here that got. Hit with the same kind of effects, and it made a lot of hit news here, which I guess went to City Hall. I mean, the poor mayor is like he's out on a limb trying to support all this stuff, but it just got too much, so I was talking to him yesterday, actually, about all this stuff, so...
Mm-hmm. So what kind of physical effects? I mean, what you're saying to us is that if you're firing this thing up and someone's walking their dog past your house, for example, and it hits them and their dog, it's not a very good thing health-wise for them. Is that right? Or
I think health-wise, I have no ill health. I'm actually seem to be getting younger, strangely enough, but that's another story where my doctor has an interest in that aspect of it. But I think the main problem is that what happens is the field is so transitory that it'll go into people's apartments and melt things, and they know from watching TV it's probably me. You know, they haven't come here with torches and burned me out yet, but anyway, they go to the news media and report that to the news media, which the news media give me copies of what they have mentioned here. And after when Tom Sky had his incident, it was a lot of doctors in this area were contacting me about this kind of thing. So the fields are transitory and will go into folks' different apartments, and people will stop me on the street saying, John, did you have that thing fired up? Because all our car alarms were going off and doors were opening and closing by themselves. And I said, I know I have to downplay it. Say, oh no, it must have been something else, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm downplaying the results. The main thing is to try and get as much evidence as you can because it's so far out and crazy. But
John, my car was floating in the air. Did you have that thing on again? No. Was it?
Oh, if I could do that honestly, if I could control something like that, I would call every major U.S. network and right. have them film it.
Well, now, okay.
For the heck of it.
There was a story that came out, I think it was like last year, I think, I could be completely wrong about this, but I think it was Denmark, I think, where a small village, or a small town, not a village, a town, all the electrical appliances in this town just caught fire. Everything from TVs to radios to toasters to anything that was plugged in suddenly started to melt and catch on fire. And it was so widespread through this entire town that the city officials came out and said that it was directly related to a UFO. And some of the scientists looked into this because it was a real report. They said that for that to happen, there would have had to have been an enormous amount of electromagnetic energy to cause that to happen. Now, could your experiments cause something like that?
Actually, yes. If it's not balanced properly, it could create those kind of effects, and has done so when it's out of balance. It's like if you... The old saying, the ham radio operators would say, gee, I got a power amplifier here, that RF power amplifier that can light up the toaster in your kitchen for sale.
Oh, yeah.
So this RF seems like it was from an unknown source.
Huh.
I think absolutely fascinating. I know CIA is very protective of their documents on this kind of stuff. They did leak one out that I have. That wasn't destroyed or anything. It was on metal pieces found after an exploded UFO in the Congo, Belgian Congo, I think. And I luckily got it scanned and I put it on my blog site. Maybe it's hard to read it, but it's an interesting one that escaped them. But
how did you do it?
I requested. I said I used to work for the U.S. government, and I want reports on UFOs as well as metals, unusual metals. So I approached it on that angle.
So you just went through the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah. And then, my privacy coordinator was John Wright, who helped me out quite a bit, and then Colonel Rogers also, because I was also at the same time trying to retrieve my documentation, but they couldn't find anything. So they invited me to go there. I wish I'd gone. I could have bragged as a CIA, you know, and Langley Bird. But no, I took the easy way out and sent my money order in for $89.10 to get this big bulk of interesting stuff out here.
Yeah.
Because my ex, Yin, was making a film on UFOs, a three-part TV miniseries, which was a big hit in many countries.
Uh-huh.
And has premiered on Entertainment Tonight.
All right, well, let me ask you this then. Your whenever you fire these things up and you're doing these particular experiments and or filming for something, and you said that it can stray out of a target zone, and that's the hard part, right? Is you fire it up and you kind of, what is it, you kind of go, all right, keep your eyes open. There's just about anything that can, or, you know, so that would suggest that it's kind of a small concentrated energy source to that would lock on onto something, almost like the, I don't know, almost like as if though it magnetizes one particular object. Has there ever been a time where several objects start? I mean, because imagine this. Imagine one day you fire this thing up and you all of a sudden null out gravity around the entire Earth. What kind of disaster that would be. So, John, I'm telling you, stuff starts floating in my house. I'm giving you a call. But am I correct on that? I mean, it's a small, focused area that seems to attach itself to something. If it's the right chemistry, suddenly you have levitation.
Basically, yes. During McDonnell Douglas tests that were open, we had the entire display of samples float up the aisle, maybe about 1 foot, I think. So it'll affect a number of objects at one time. And that was in 1985. So it'll affect a lot of things at one time or a single object. And the other incident with a human was Nancy O'Donnell of National Geographic TV and Film, where her hair started to float up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And she got nervous and said, wait a minute. And everybody stopped filming and looked at me and said, are we going to be okay doing this? I said, yes, it was done many times before, no problems, as well as on national news with CTV.
Mm-hmm.
With Alan and Edwards reporting the story, going on the 6 o'clock news, so they had no problems.
So is there, from what you've determined from your experiments after all these years of doing this, is there somewhat of a radius that you can narrow it down to that it's going to happen within this radius of this? Because, well, I know, let's talk radio waves for a moment. When radio waves, let's take FM, for example. Now, FM's a different animal. It's line of sight. So, with that being said, if you've got a transmitter, let's say 1-watt transmitter set up in the middle of a neighborhood, you've got a very, very high tower, and you're at the very, very top of the hill, with that 1 watt, you can go a pretty good distance. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that radio waves actually diminish as you get out. It just means that the amount of interference from other radio waves are going to null that out because it just doesn't have that output power. With that being said, with your devices, with your systems, is there a radius? And the reason why I'm getting to this, because let's go back to that incident that I told you about where all the appliances caught on fire. I mean, could it have been you? I don't know. You're saying that your systems could cause something like that, or could it be someone in that area doing the same kind of experiments? Maybe government, for example.
I would say it's highly probable that it'd be either somebody doing it in quiet, like myself, and not going into the media with it, or it could be government,
right,
doing something like that, or it was a satellite mishap. Or maybe they were testing something and they couldn't turn it off. But yeah, that's just my guessing. I mean, to me, what happened there, it seems like a huge amount of RF being bombarded into that region.
Right. So that also answers the question that there is somewhat of a radius to this, yes?
Pretty much so.
Okay. I've seen in the past, I've seen some of the video footage, and one of the ones that I saw was, and I can't fully remember, was it ice cream in a cup?
Ice cream in a cup. That would be about 1987, 1988.
Uh-huh.
We We're on a lucky run here with many effects happening, so this is a wait. How many feet was it? Maybe about 50 feet away from the lab in another room.
Mm-hmm.
And we set up different samples and just kept the camera running all the time, so it wound up to be about maybe 5 hours of those kind of effects with metal or water, ice cream, carrots, metal, you name it. We put it in there and see what happened. It was a good test run, and then after that, it was a different team then. They tried the experiment without me there, and they were able to levitate a 1,500-pound X-ray transformer, which came down with a tremendous thud, I'm told. And they videotaped it, but I don't have a copy of that video, unfortunately.
Let me just back you up just a little bit. So you took ice cream, you put it in a cup, you secured the cup down, is that right? And then fired this up, and the ice cream in the cup levitated?
No, just put just anything in there. It could be water or ice cream. Just took it out of the refrigerator. We had a lab refrigerator, and there was some ice cream in a cup thing, and just stick it in there and see what happened to the ice cream. Okay, cool.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it took off into the... Actually, we damaged that entire building so much with these kind of crazy experiments that the owner of the building was not too happy.
Okay.
We had nails floating through the wall. We had misty things, like deep red misty things appearing and reappearing somewhere else and going through the ceiling.
How did it damage the building?
Well, boards and things were flying around and...
You say it so casually. You know?
I get used to this kind of stuff after a while.
I can imagine.
I mean, life could be worse. It could be a war zone or people shooting at you. But this is kind of funny. We had the entire building disappear, according to the people I was with. I didn't see it happen, but they told me about it. But
the entire building that you were working in disappeared.
Vanished. Just totally vanished. And I didn't see it happen. I can only give credibility to both my people that I'm working with. I wouldn't say they would make such a story up. There's no reason to.
Right.
But they were trying to get the lab equipment insured. And the insurance man who came around said he came around. He just saw a vacant lot next to the 88 food market.
Uh-huh.
Because George Lissacase, another George, he was very curious about this. He asked the man, the insurance agent, everything. Well, okay, the 88 food market, because it had two great big eights of red on white, and you can't miss it.
Uh-huh.
And next to us, or next to them, was our building. And he said, no, all I saw was a vacant lot, no other building. This 88, yes, on the side of the building, two stories high. But no other building anywhere.
Well,
and we tried to get him to come back, and he wouldn't come back. He said, no, you guys are pulling some kind of stupid joke. I'm not interested in it.
All right, well, let's touch on that a little bit. We're talking about pure invisibility. Pure invisibility. Now, from what I know about light itself is a magnetic disturbance. It just is. It's a magnetic disturbance. Now, with some of the experiments that you're working with, that would suggest that there's going to be a magnetic resonance of some sort, yes?
Well, you could say that. I mean, starlight will bend.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a large gravitational mass nearby, it'll distort it a little bit.
But we're talking, that's with black holes, because a black hole has an enormous amount of gravity to where light cannot escape.
Mm-hmm.
So,
exactly.
Put me on the right track here. Help me understand.
Mm-hmm.
How will invisibility happen with your work?
The invisibility of the building. It must have been a fluke, something. We had a lot of flukes like that.
Uh-huh.
We had portals that opened up that showed us multicolored things inside of it, and we actually got on tape. Luckily, a few times. Now, the building disappearing, I'm still a little perplexed on that, unless there was a time shift of some type. I just don't know. I'm still very perplexed over that.
Right.
Although we had smaller things disappear and at least reappear or change their position from one location to another. That was well documented.
Right.
And those samples are still under analysis. But the building itself, building that large, it was two stories industrial with apartments on the top. Well, where do the people? Did the people notice this thing disappear or what?
Right,
so,
right.
I'm just trying to wrap that around. And after that, I started taking measurements of the background radiation with Geiger counters and found that the background radiation dropped down a couple of counts per minute instead of the normal 15 or whatever.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that cosmic rays are somehow being either deflected or not coming through.
Hmm.
They're very strong particles, and they come through at anything. But that's why they build these tanks way below in the Earth to prevent that when they're studying neutrinos.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
But this particular thing is up on top of the building with the Geiger counter, and I recalibrated the Geiger counter several times, and it would indicate that it's normal. I turn the equipment off. Okay, the background radiation comes back to its normal 15 per 60 seconds.
Now, is that background radiation? That's not the harmful radiation that you would normally expect, is it?
Well, that's just your background radiation from space.
Okay.
You get a few clicks. You hear if you have a Geiger counter and turn it on, you hear it click away a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So after 60 seconds, you maybe have 10 to 15, 20 counts. It's a very interesting thing to actually watch on a strip chart recorder because it seems to come in patterns sometimes.
Really? What do you make of that?
I think it's fascinating. Because I see things I'm a very visual person. I see things that way instead of mathematically, and to see a strip chart recorder and hooked up to an ordinary Geiger counter and just staring at it, it's kind of intriguing.
Right. So with all the information that you actually gather, because I'm sure that during these experiments that you do, you're taking notes on all of that to kind of paint a picture for yourself to kind of go, okay, well, if we adjust this a little bit or tweak this side a little bit, we can get this result, right?
Well, I don't keep paper notes. I keep mental notes.
Just mental notes and everything. Okay, well, even with that, over the years, have you been able to refine it and come up with new ideas of maybe, I don't know, focusing this energy to maybe a beam, let's say? I mean, can you do something of that sort, or no?
Oh, in the last several years here, I was able to do that very well after giving many demonstrations to various production people. I could sit down, turn it on, and something would happen. So I got very good at stabilizing it. But, of course, the incident with Tom Sky and others, well, that caused a wave to travel. I estimate from the phone calls and people in that, but 10 square city blocks, I think.
So, every time I picture that in my mind, I see the humor behind it, you know?
Well, the poor mayor, the mayor of New Westminster, he was here in 2005 with Councillor Mr. O'Donnell, and he was saying he's getting reports of citizens in distress and concrete blowing up.
Concrete blowing up?
Yeah.
All right.
It's happened here a few times, too.
All right, well, that's not, obviously it's not something they can pin on you, right?
Not really, no. I mean, but, you know, talking to the mayor yesterday, he was just so stressed out over it. And I said, I understand that. Because there's a fire inspection here in February 29, and they came in here and just said, oh, this stuff has to go.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay. I got it in writing, so there's been a lot of interest in that aspect of it. And I could, after talking to the mayor, I was kind of part of the battle, but after talking to the mayor, he's under stress from citizens. Well, okay, I understand that. I'm moving anyway to Los Angeles. to do my network TV show, I'll just start cleaning out what I don't need in here, which has been going on for a couple of days. So the main goal is to relocate to L.A. to a studio to do this thing.
All right, let me ask you this. How big is the town that you live in right now?
Well, it used to be actually for British Columbia the capital. It's a fairly large city.
Right.
It's a section of Vancouver. Don't know the exact population, but City Hall's maybe in walking distance of here, maybe 20 minutes, 15 minutes of walking.
Okay.
So it's several miles, maybe the size of Liechtenstein, maybe.
So if you go to Los Angeles and you set everything up there, have you found a way to isolate it within the building, for example? I mean, I know that, you know, I've been up to GE Medical where they do all the experiments with electromagnetism, and they got the signs on the door saying if you have a pacemaker, do not walk into this area, stay clear of this area. And they have these shielded rooms. They have these huge rooms that almost are like the copper and aluminum and I think zinc mesh screens inside these rooms to kind of isolate the electromagnetic fields. Have you come up with a way to isolate that so it doesn't shoot or whatever it is, doesn't go 10 block radius or mess where you'll have concrete exploding in Los Angeles? Or, you know, because, you know, you don't want to mess with those guys. If they have anything that messes up their Botox treatments, you're in trouble.
Oh, I know. I know that. I wouldn't want to ever harm anybody. It's, I think the levitation will be one big experiment because we have, that'll be one episode unto itself.
Right.
Then we will be going into different areas doing very unusual shows.
Right.
So we're going to have to, it's going to be risky, but we're going to try it, and we'll take as much shielding and stuff as possible. I think that I'm familiar with Paramount Studios. They have big, big lots and buildings in there, and I'm not sure where they're going to set it up, Fox Studios, I think, but It will be actually very well taken care of, as I'm told.
Right. Well, I would.
We're going to do the Philadelphia experiment too. I mean, Ronnie wants to use a full size warship. Okay, Ron, I'll go for it.
Really?
Can we do it? You know.
Hey, well, you know what happened to the guys? Well, some of the reports, anyway, from some of the guys embarked on that journey, they didn't end very well for some of them.
No, nobody be on the ship though. It'd just be either be a 4 foot length model, or Ronnie wants to try a full scale one. Or the frigate would be cool. It's not too big, but
Are you going to volunteer to be on if they do a full scale? Are you going to be one of the guys on board the ship?
Absolutely not. I will look at the ship. I will search it out like a cat, you know. But I'm not going to be on it when we fire that up. It'll be all remote.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say that the going out to a very large, remote, dry lake bed and trying some of this stuff would. They've got these big, General Electric mobile, 48-foot-long generators that can produce a lot of energy. They could drag out there to do some of these experiments, which would be quite interesting because, well, you have a blank canvas, in a sense. Everything's so flat, you could do all kinds of experiments. And it reminds me of, I think it was X-Men, where one episode where they walk out and rocks and everything else are floating and in midair. It'd be kind of like that in an open area, wouldn't it? Sort of.
Absolutely. It would be a lot better than in the congested area.
Yeah.
You could put a lot of around the test area. You could put all kinds of stuff all over the place and see what happens.
Sure, yeah. Dry lake bed. Let's get it out there, you know? Love to set up some cameras. I mean, even having, here I am running with the ideas, even live cameras where people could, click into on a website and watch the experiments live would be absolutely fascinating.
Absolutely. I agree. And Also, it'd probably be edited. I mean, to see it happen through cameras, yes, but it would probably be edited down to fit in 1 hour, I believe.
Right, right.
But
interesting stuff. All right, well, let's open up some phone lines here after the break, and we actually got a call came in. There was a guy who was already wanting to talk to you before we even got you on the air. So we're gonna open up the phone lines here when we come back. And if you've got questions for John, you can lay them on him. The phone number is to call, and pay very, very close attention to this, is area code 206-9737-UFO. That's 206-9737-UFO. Or you can also get through on the Chicago line at 312-239-8902. And they'll be open here when we come back from the break. So stick around. Don't go away. This is Paranormal Radio. My guest tonight, John Hutchinson. As you can see, he's laying some heavy stuff on you. We'll be right back.
Growing at such an alarming rate that anyone looking to start their own website for podcast or shoutcast training, it is almost impossible to choose who to go with. Well, I'm here to tell you that your questions are answered.
It's simple. B2Net Solutions is the one for you. They offer affordable and, most importantly, reliable hosting for your website, and they are so reliable, they are the number one hosting solution on the net.
If you sign up today or transfer your existing website or shoutcast stream, just tell them Captain Jack sent you. And in addition to great service, you'll also get access to the experts in web development and audio streaming from WPRG Radio.
What?
That's right. All your technical questions answered step by step from a professional team.
So go to www.b2netsolutions.com or call them at 1-888-984-8338 and tell them Captain Jack sent you.
The internet puts the world at our fingertips, but it can be a very dangerous place, especially for children. I'm Dean Sparks, Director of Children's Services. The internet is just another door into your home. You wouldn't let a stranger walk through your front door, but ask yourself, who might my child be letting into the house through the computer? Here's what you can do. Teach your kids not to share personal information online. Educate yourself about internet parental controls and have your kids show you their favorite websites. Be aware that they could also be surfing the web at the library or a friend's house. Put your computer in a place where you can monitor your children while they use it. Ask yourself, does your child spend a lot of time online late at night or change the screen quickly when you walk into the room? Are there calls from people you don't know, suspicious telephone charges, or unexplained gifts? Remember, if your child is online, you should be on guard. I'm Dean Sparks. For more on what parents should know, visit us on the web.
Are you looking to get that cutting-edge sound for your commercial or promo? Yeah, yeah, yeah. LJ Productions can do it for you. LJ has over 6 years of radio production experience. Whether it's a hot, sassy promo with all the zips and zaps, to a contemporary commercial with easygoing music, or a rockin' hard commercial that'll get you moving, competitive rates, quick turnaround of usually 24 hours or less, LJ will work with you every step of the way to get your commercial or promo to sound exactly the way you want it. Do you want yours to sound like this one?
I want one.
Then email LJ at production@WPRTradio.com to get started with your project today.
August 29th, Hurricane Katrina destroyed a wide swath of the Gulf Coast. AmeriCorps members are now helping provide evacuees across the country with life's basic necessities.
I just feel that I'm doing my part. People are needing things, and you're helping that get there. Like, knowing that when you get this pallet full of diapers or hygiene products, it's going to get somewhere to somebody. And you can't fix their lives, but you can make, like, day-to-day life a little bit easier, and that's what puts me at ease. AmeriCorps has afforded me the chance to actually be in situations where I wouldn't have normally been or I wouldn't have otherwise seen, and afforded me the chance to work with people who really believe in what they're doing. I mean, it's just a great feeling. Give up a year of your life to actually make someone else's better. I don't really think that there is anything better than that.
Every day, in communities throughout the nation, AmeriCorps is responding to needs in education, health care, the environment, and housing. Get involved.
4,734 UFO sightings in 2007. 854 abductions by aliens or unknown species reported by American and British citizens, and hundreds more suspectedly unreported in 2007. Suppressed information about collisions with passenger aircraft and UFOs that has been kept from the public knowledge for years, and only one trusted source on information from some of the top UFO researchers in the world. Exclusive information that cannot be found anywhere else on the planet. Trusted, connected, accurate. TheUFOStore.com. Expand your personal library with fast shipping and instant downloadable information from the largest selection of UFO products on the internet by going to TheUFOStore.com or call on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week order line at 541-523-2630. The truth is out there, and TheUFOStore.com has it.
In an instant, my son could make anyone smile. In an instant, he was gone. The driver was looking for other cars. But he didn't watch out for my son. Crossing the street. Imagine, in the time it takes to stop for someone in the crosswalk, you could save a life. Or change yours forever.
A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
When you saw images of flooded streets, people suffering, and destroyed homes, AmeriCorps member Alana Sanson didn't hesitate. She acted.
There was just sides of buildings ripped apart and roofs fallen, like torn and peeled back, and steeples fallen off of churches, houses are gone, debris piles are above my head, and the houses that are still standing are all filled with mold and everything has to be torn out of them, and they were flooded with 5 feet of water. It was unreal. I'd never seen anything like it. We worked at the shelter for about 2 weeks when we first got down here, and I had one woman come in and she dropped a plate of food and she just started crying and I felt so terrible, and it was really hard to like try to settle her down and let her know that it was okay, that we had more food that we could give out.
AmeriCorps needs your help. Find the opportunity that's right for you in your community and throughout the nation, tutoring kids, building affordable housing, cleaning up the environment, and more. Call 800-942-2677 or visit AmeriCorps.gov.
You are listening to Paranormal Radio on WPRT. The phone lines are open at 312-239-8902 or send an email to Captain Jack at WPRTRadio.com. And now, once again, the voice of darkness, your host, Captain Jack.
Indeed, that is me. Welcome back, everybody. This is Paranormal Radio. We're moving along here in the darkness. Quickly approaching the witching hour. Oh, we've got a little ways to go. Yeah, it's getting kind of getting weird trying to get used to this new time schedule. And of course, in April, we're going to be going to Monday through Friday doing this particular program. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. It should be a lot of fun. Exhausting. 3 days right now is kind of exhausting at times. But, hell, I'm up for it. That's the way I started out. Might as well go back to it. I took a moment during a break to just kind of step outside and, you know, the stars, take a good close look at them. You know, Atlanta's still cleaning up from the tornadoes and things that have gone through here. And so a lot of things around my area has not been restored yet, like some of the power lights and things like that, street lights. So it's nice and dark, and I kind of like it, you know. Well, except for the things that still are not active at my home. That's always irritating, extremely irritating at this point, but it's awfully peaceful out there. So, anyway. All right, tonight my guest is John Hutchinson. We're talking about anti-gravity and among many other things. The Philadelphia experiment is being referenced a lot tonight. So, John, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, sir.
The questions that I have. I mean, there's so many things running through my mind with all of this. And I did mention that you're very nonchalant when talking about this, which is understandable. The reason being is because whenever you experience things like this, or even some of the things that I've done, and I talk about them nonchalantly, and people are just amazed by it. And they go, how can you talk about it so calmly? So that part... I can understand. I really can understand. But
it depends on who you're talking to, too.
This is true.
I was talking to a lawyer once about something, a problem I had with all this stuff, and he said, thank God you came back with documentation. We thought you were insane.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You got to admit, it's some pretty far-out stuff, because one would think that with the stuff that you're doing... Why are we not seeing it more in everyday life? Why has not some company, some corporation, picked up on this, taken some of their top minds and applied them to this to refine it? Because you mentioned, you said you're not really a scientist. You're a guy that... curious about it, you started experimenting with it, you learned enough about it to do what you do, you self-taught in a sense, right?
That's right.
So why has there not been companies that latched on to this and ran with it? Because if it's straying outside of a target zone, it can be kind of dangerous, but still, regardless, there has to be someone that can figure out a way to get involved in it to a sense where it can be used in everyday life, because we're essentially talking almost on the aspects of free energy in a sense, aren't we?
Well, yes, that's another area that I've tried to actually get into manufacturing is my power cells, which are what they call, my DARPA calls them energy scavenging cells, meaning they'll collect anything, vibration, mm-hmm. noise, heat, zero-point energy to produce power, but we tried doing that, but no funding. They're actually ready to go to factory.
Hmm.
Sell them for $10 on to kids or whoever wants these things.
What do they do? I mean, what? Explain it. What is it?
Common minerals that are ground up and treated in a special way that produce a little bit of power, and if somebody wanted to go all the way out with something like this, they could manufacture them into tiny miniature cells and put them in series and parallel and have a power supply. But unfortunately, nobody really that interested in funding it.
Huh. Well, you know, I know that, I mean, if you look around, let's take a cell phone, for example. You have this very small battery that you can slap in there, and it can last anywhere between, 8 to 14 hours. 14 hours standby, for example. 8 hours talk time, which is generating that power. It's very small. Could you, and I understand the concept of parallel and series, and with one cell, how much electrical output does it have? Like 1.5 volt, or how many volts does it actually put out? Is it AC/DC? What is it?
Actually, the cells will put out anywhere from, depending on the mixtures in that, they'll put out anywhere from half a volt up to, well, the biggest one I ever made was a small portable, but it was 28 volts, but at a quarter of an ampere.
Okay.
But that was a different design, and it slowly broke down in time and actually disintegrated.
Oh.
But the other cells that are ground up and treated with high voltage, they tend to last forever, I think.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the first one being made in 1993, and they're still working. And some are on display in Hiroshima City as an alternative energy source.
Right. Well, we said we were going to open up the phone lines here after the break, and so that's what we did. So let's go to our first caller. Caller, you're on with John Hutchinson. Where are you calling from, and your name, please?
Hey, Captain Jack. This is Fineman. I'm calling from Washington, D.C., East Coast, USA.
Welcome.
Yeah, I'm also sick of politics, so I feel you on that one. What a joke, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's the same dog and pony show, that's for sure.
So, you guys were just talking about the crystal power cells, and that's kind of what I was calling about.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so yeah, I'm calling representing overunity.com, and basically we're a bunch of physics researchers, and our goal is to open source some of this technology.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there's all sorts of different, you know, strategies for getting free energy. But so I'm calling for a bit of technical discussion and advice, maybe a little bit, see what I can find out here.
Well, the floor is yours.
So I just want to say hi to John, first of all, and that we all got your back, and we appreciate all of your research.
Well, thank you, kind sir.
Okay, so I'm not even going to comment on the Hutchinson effect, since we know that's real.
Right.
And there's enough weapons already in the world, so I kind of want to talk about energy. So some people have done these replications of the crystal power cells, and for the listeners, the big batteries, which just, you know, put out power, but they don't really work like, you know, a regular battery does. Anyway, so I'm wondering what you think as to the origin of why these batteries work.
I think the origin is zero-point energy.
Okay.
Is the main activator in there. In some ways, some people will argue that it's a petroelectric effect, but I believe that that's in part, too. I think there's a number of combinations of things in these cells that do work. And sometimes if the mixtures, if the mixtures are not right, you know, I wind up with a lot of duds when I make these things for people, and they just don't work. But later on, oddly, sometimes they do work. Really good ones.
So a bunch of people have tried to make them, and they normally have tried them with ground-up quartz, which is basically silicon dioxide. And the question seems to be in sort of the activation, because people have tried different types of stuff. And maybe we could get some hints from you in what direction to take in this sort of research. Like, what sort of voltage and what sort of nature are we talking about for the activation? Is the high voltage that which activates them, is that pulsed or is that continuous?
Well, no, that would be a pulse.
It's pulse.
Much like the Westinghouse process, where they take ordinary material like tar or wax, vaporize it, and put it through a high direct current chamber, distillation chamber, and then it condenses down into a self-reactive material. They used to make that for capacitors a long time ago. It has a memory, and it self-charges all the time. I found that out in the 1980s when I picked up one, and that got shot across the room. Ouch! You know, it falls in the line of almost like barium titanate, which is another self-reactive material, which has got some people really interested in developing zero-point energy devices of that material. But quartz, I wouldn't recommend at all, but more in the line of metals, such as galena and pyrites, along with salts, Epsom salts, and other salt combinations.
Now, explain that a little bit for someone who might not know what it is you're referencing. Why would you recommend that?
For me?
Yeah.
The salts?
Yes.
Well, the salts are stable, and they act as a buffer in between the metallic plates. So when you have a small amount of metallic plates that are very close together, although they are covered with Epsom salts or other salts that are piezoelectric in nature, and that helps in producing the effect you're looking for.
Okay.
And the central post should be niobium metal, because it loves to grab onto, that particular metal loves to grab onto electrons and use tiny amounts of also germanium metal.
Okay, well, all right. Well, caller, your input on that.
Well, actually, I've been constructed. I'm not speaking on behalf of other people at overunity.com who voiced these questions, specifically Ian and the others who have actually built these cells.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that helps a lot, actually. So that was a good answer. I don't know much about it. I think that they probably originate in the Casimir effect from quantum theory, but I really don't know.
Right.
But, okay, so the second question I got written here is, what sort of resistance should we see in these cells? Are we seeing, because the people that are creating them are seeing internal resistance of 10 megohm. Is that in the ballpark, or is that messed up?
Oh, sounds messed up. It depends
on... Okay, so that's not right.
Yeah, it's... Like, I never had a proper lab to even make these things. To be honest, it was more or less... when I made them, there were trial and error. But once you get a proper lab where you measure everything out and great details, and you put together combinations, the proper combinations, and present that to the factory for going into full production. Because the beauty of those things are they would conform to injection molding. So you could have the miniature cells down to a cubic centimeter in series and parallel and pushed out into a block, small blocks or whatever shape you want, and these would be ready for the public right away.
Huh. Wow.
But our funding never came through from Canadian Environment Protection Agency people.
So what? They got to rubber stamp that before. Well, of course, they have to rubber stamp that before you can go to any type of production for it. But why wouldn't they rubber stamp it?
No, the Canadian government people.
Yeah.
I don't. We took one right there into their main offices in Vancouver City. I had another business partner at the time, Richard Brewer, and we put it down there on the table, and they looked like, well, that's an interesting-looking thing, you know, kind of attitude, but what do you do with it? And I said, well, we explained that it's an alternative power source.
Uh-huh.
Can you help us, like, promote it and get it out there? And they said, well, we don't know what to do with it, basically. So Richard Brewer was actually very disturbed at their attitude, being from the UK.
Right.
And I thought, well, Richard, that's, what can I say? People are like that.
Yeah, all right. Well, let me ask you both this. Because, well, this just kind of we're going to turn you into a full-fledged guest caller.
I love it.
Let me ask you this. Why do you think that the attitude is like that? I mean, because I've seen it many times before. Anytime you start talking about alternative energies, you know, the scientific community as a whole has to be behind it 100%, going, yes, it works continuously. It's like cold fusion. I mean, they know that cold fusion is real. They've been able to replicate it in certain laboratories and experiments. Although they can't keep it consistent, it's not because they don't know how. It's just that they don't know enough about it to have that happen. But yet, anytime someone comes forward with an alternative energy of any kind, they kind of look down your nose and go, okay, their nose, and say, go away, and we'll maybe look into it. Why do you think that is?
Well, I would say that, I mean, I'm sure John probably has run into this before, that this information's been around and it's been suppressed for the past 100 years at least. And, it started with Tesla, and I would say that this world runs on money. But, you know, paper money created by the central bankers, and
right.
You can't really control people if you have an infinite source of energy.
Right.
So I think that has something to do with it.
I think so, too. Really, the control issue is interesting. It covers runs right across the board, from everybody taking away guns, firearms, to vitamins, to anything where a person used to be quite independent, relying on all these controls.
All right,
not a healthy thing for a person, human being, really.
Well, let me play devil's advocate for a minute. Just for a minute, for the sake of argument. I'm a large corporation. I take a look around the world right now, and I see that our chain, in a sense, to some of the fossil fuels and things along that nature is it's strangling us. And all of a sudden, you come along to me and you say, look, I have an alternate fuel source for, you know, X, for example. Maybe it's not for cars or whatever, just batteries, for example. And I look at this and go, wow, it works. It really works. And if I, as a company, could mass produce this and provide it to the same people that are looking at the world the same way that I am, I would make a mint. To hell with the oil companies, to hell with the power companies. I've got something that blows it all away, and people are starving for and hungry for. Why wouldn't I run with that? I mean, I guess in a sense that kind of, I mean, what you're saying makes sense. I fully believe that. I mean, it's a good old boys system when it comes right down to it. Although there are some people out there that will take this and run with it. I mean, what have been some of the reasons why they have not?
Well, in my particular case, the Japanese wanted to run with it and funded me to a large amount of money, and I made a number of units that they were interested in, and that, of course, I never heard back from them.
Huh.
Then there was a German gentleman who was very interested in getting this out there. He funded me for an amazing amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And after about 2 years, I had a lot of helpers, too. They were showing these things, these power cells off down in Hollywood land to a lot of actors and actresses who were quite interested in this stuff, and they kept meticulous records and documentation on this that Grant gave me.
Uh-huh.
But Thomas, he paid...
Michael Center, my graduate student, 2 years ago. It takes a small flashlight, it takes 3 4.5 volts total. So you basically have this battery that never discharges. You just stack them together until you get that particular voltage. You slap it in this flashlight, and the flashlight never stops working.
That's it. My partner there, I don't know where he disappeared to. He's in Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
He did a video on these cells, and he was able to power a small radio and alarm clock,
mm-hmm.
which means there's working energy there. And he wrote up an incredible documentation on it, as well as a promotional video. Very extremely well done. And I haven't heard from Grant for a couple of years now.
Really?
He's that's kind of vanished. Like
that's,
he had a website called Project Spark, or ET it's called. What the heck was that? I got his thing here somewhere, but
okay, so basically you can make one of these things now, yes? Or do you need specific ingredients to make this, or how does that work?
Well, I could just go to the local drugstore and get them, order in some Rochelle salt, germanium metal, fine dust,
mm-hmm.
along with galena,
mm-hmm.
iron pyrite, and you're off to the races.
Cost-wise, what is this usually? You don't have to answer that, but...
The cost actually, I made some for an Austrian fellow. Actually, no, sorry, German. He's with an Austrian team just around Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even tested. I've sent out many to be tested. Mm-hmm. So the actual cost, material cost, maybe 50 cents to a dollar. Maybe less than that in production. Basically, that's all. Money's taken up in production and time, I guess, but I think that's why I feel it's so factory compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get over the initial startup cost, you can go into production.
Mm-hmm.
And these things could be out there like 3Bs or like for a dollar or something like that.
And how many amps? Like, let's say you took five of these things, 1.5 volts each, put them all together, how many amps would this actually put out?
Actually, I've had up to one lucky strike of many of these things put together. Some years ago, it was measured at 3 amperes.
Wow.
3 volts at 3 amps. That's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty big. I mean, that's the equivalent to 12 volt LiCad battery and an iron can. That's a big voltage storage.
I gave them, with that particular unit, I broke it down to where it produced half that amount. And I took it to Japan,
mm-hmm.
and I demonstrated it at the 50th anniversary of the bombing in Japan, and it comes on new CD. I gave my demo, it did work fine, and just after that, I had like 3 television cameras on there. I said, okay, well, I gave a demonstration, it worked, but... You thought of that doubt, there's batteries in there, you know.
Right.
To do that kind of thing once in a while.
Sure.
So I took it all apart right away so that camera people could poke in there and look around and put it all over the table and no batteries. So that's a demonstration you can do.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So I'm going to ask you this.
I love being on the spot.
Can you build me one of these things?
It looks like I could. Yes.
Okay. Building. I don't care if it puts out, let's say 5 volts. 5 volts, never discharging, building that thing. I need to see it for myself. I need to see it in my head. And you know what I'll do? I will take videos, I will put it up in, and I will not stop talking about it for a year. I will set up a live 24-hour camera on this thing with a light bulb attached to it to prove to the world that this thing never discharges.
Awesome. That's exciting.
I will absolutely 100% definitely do that. And this show is recorded, so you have me.
I'll definitely do that. I want to see it. I do. I want to see
cool.
it.
Cool. Cool.
And, you know, all this time we still have the caller on. Caller, one more time.
Hey.
Plug the website.
Oh, yeah, it's overunity.com, OVERUNITY.com. It's run out of Germany by Stefan. My name is Feynman. And I got actually just one last question for John here. So is this pulse DC that we're sending in at high voltage, is that going to work, or do I not want pulse DC?
You need continuous CW voltage on that.
Oh, because earlier you were saying
you're doing it right when it's curing. When the crystals are curing, you're doing it properly that way. You should use roughly anywhere from 12 to 20,000 volts DC for experimental and see what happens there. You don't want it to start cooking or anything like that, and it means it's not right mix. I have that happen a few times where, oops. Yeah, literally.
So this is continuous then, you're telling me? Not
yeah.
Pulse? Because earlier I thought you said pulse. Maybe you said don't do pulse.
No, I've found the best results with
is definitely
pure,
pulse.
Really clean, direct current, high voltage.
Okay, gotcha. And then the last thing I want to ask is whether you're familiar with the work of Bedini or Bearden or any of those guys, maybe your thoughts on them.
I've known Tom Bearden for a long, long time, and he's a supporter of my work. He appeared in Ian's film, Miracle of the Unknown on UFOs, and he promotes my work in that film, actually. And Bedini, had a chance to go up to his lab when I was in Scottsdale, but I didn't go up there with Gordon Noble and gang from the Ramstar back engineering alien spacecraft people.
Mm-hmm.
I got invited on board with that group, but I thought I'd better uninvite myself a little bit there because it's another long story, but I'd like to meet him sometime. Maybe he'll be a good guest for our network TV show.
There you go.
That'd be fantastic.
Great.
What I want to do is teach people. I have my adopted daughter in Texas. She's going to build it all on her own and test it and show it on television.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. All right, well, let me just do this real quick. All right, caller, thank you so much for calling in. I hope you got all the questions that you
had. Oh, yeah, I got plenty of info. And thanks to John for helping us out with it. Definitely will be open sourcing the hints you've given us. And, hope everything goes well for you. Appreciate the assistance.
Call in again sometime and let me know.
I'll definitely bounce you an email.
That'd be great.
Okay, fantastic.
Thanks for calling.
All right, take care.
Bye. All right, John. So you have a lot of different projects in the works. Mm-hmm. Is there? I don't want to reveal too much if there is, but is there anything in the mix that new research, new discoveries, anything like that that you want to give a sampler to the listeners?
I would like that to do that. Actually, I found that the iron pyrite from Japan area seemed to be most active.
Meaning?
In helping these crystal power cells to put out the energy.
Uh-huh.
That I found interesting. Because I thought to myself, okay, I'm on a desert island, what do I do? I have no electrical energy. Okay, I can get a piece of zinc and copper, stick it in a lemon or something, but
right.
I didn't want to go that route. I mean, everybody does that, but I thought, okay, what about ordinary minerals and what I gleaned information from Tetons and Brown and others. I thought, okay, what about a crystal power source? Just ground up a bunch of minerals and try it and see if it even... I thought, okay, I'll try it. Because what kind of told me what to do here, too, was old germanium diodes from military surplus equipment seem to have an excess of energy from them.
Yeah.
And I remember way back in the 80s, late 80s, we were playing with these things, Alec, myself, and George, and we could find that these things put out energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we use them in reverse, too, because they pick up energy sources unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, George. He got the information on these to actually go out and build what he called a field stress detector, which detects oil, gas, water, and that. And he built a company called Pinnacle Oil International.
Mm-hmm.
He made himself $70 million, and then when the unit broke, well, myself and Alec weren't going to go to the rescue on him, and he slowly dropped down and formed another oil company. I think he's gaining back up again, but
mm-hmm.
that's just some of the aspects of using these things in reverse as a detector.
Right.
They'll detect unusual things.
Very interesting.
It's a whole area of science, too, that could be opened up.
Right. And so, you have some new videos and stuff coming out, too, don't you?
New videos?
Yes.
What topic?
I don't know. You tell me. I mean,
well, this is, I've done a lot of television shows. They're airing all the time. I have a lot of stock footage that's never been put out there. My producer up here in Canada, he sells it off to the main companies for $70 per second.
Uh-huh.
And he has a lot of my footage.
Right.
But, I got all kinds of video stuff that the internet is so horrendous to try and put a video in there. It's like, dial up. Like, I'm on dial up, but I have extensive piles and piles of videos, boxes of them that nobody's ever seen.
Never seen before, huh?
Oh yeah.
So many avenues you could go with that one. All right, what's your website address?
Oh. Well, I got crazy webmasters. I like to use my own blogger site, and it's http://johnkhutchison.blogspot.com. Or if you Google search out just Waiting on the Edge of Forever,
mm-hmm.
up comes my blogger thing.
Right.
I have control over it, and I can put anything in there. I call it my virtual filing cabinet, so
right.
There's a lot of different things in there. It's all the latest Hutchison Effect stuff, 2008, 2006, 2007,
right.
as well as the power cells and other crazy and wonderful things are in that blogger.
All right. Well, we're going to continue on here. Caller, you're on the air with John Hutchison and Captain Jack.
Hello. Yes. I wanted to confirm about the...
Real quick, your name and where you're calling from.
It's Randy Zeesness with Spirits of the Land Foundation.
Okay.
I wanted to confirm that I worked with the germanium diodes, the military stuff,
mm-hmm.
during the projects that's in Bill Tiller's books on the what he calls the black boxes.
Mm-hmm.
That generate the unusual energy out from them so that you could put your intent into the electronic circuit. And then it would generate that intent every time you turn on the electronic device. So they were able to raise the pH of water by 1 point or reduce it by 1 point by putting their intent into the circuits. So part of that circuitry used those germanium diodes in reverse flow.
So they don't make these anymore, I assume, right?
I quit making them for them a long time ago, and we had some kind of unusual things happen when people turned them on. They kind of had an out-of-body experience, so we thought we'd better do some more research.
Really?
Yeah, so we haven't made or sold any, but except for the ones that were made for Bill for the research that he did in his books. So I currently have been testing one in a 10-foot satellite. So we have groups of people come sit around the satellite, and it's got a little black box in it, and it tends to warp gravity so they have an out-of-body experience so that we can try to figure out just exactly what's happening.
John, your comment?
Yes, I know Bill Tiller. He's a brilliant scientist. And last, he left Stanford and moved to Scottsdale area and Fountain Hills, I think.
Yeah, he's got a lab up in Payson.
That's right, yeah. He's a very, very interesting person, and he knows Dr. Elizabeth Rauscher. They're good friends, as well as myself to Dr. Rauscher. Brilliant people. They're the kind of the right stuff in the scientific community.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting that you confirmed about these diodes. You're the first person I ever heard that would confirm about these diodes. I personally, if I had an out-of-body experience, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think I do in a dream state. When I'm in a dream state, I go somewhere else.
We built the first ones in 91, and originally they were designed to affect certain aspects of human functions.
Like, for example?
Well, let's just say that we moved on to other things, and we found that the black boxes were able to hold your mental intent, and then when you turned the black boxes on, they would broadcast that intent 3,000 to 5,000 feet.
You mean like reading your thoughts, or
no? The experiments that are in Bill's books, they would take one of the black boxes, which is not my design, but their design.
Uh-huh.
They would take those boxes and they would say, okay, we're going to have this black box change the pH in water by 1 point,
mm-hmm.
up or down,
mm-hmm.
two different boxes. And so simply by turning on the black box, it changed the pH of the water.
Oh.
So, because a long time ago, I used to be a security consultant, and I was trying to tell people in the security industry that they needed to shield their chips. Because I was born a little strange, so I could see the hump where there was a one and no energy where there was a zero.
Uh-huh.
And then they thought I was nuts, so I said, well, fine, we'll get a squid machine, and I'll show you. And so you can actually see what's in a chip by the array.
Uh-huh.
And so then I, by doing that, I realized that I could actually change form and go into the chips. So then I found only one chip worked that had a very unusual ability to hold mental thought.
Mm-hmm.
So I originally built those as the breeders for Clarus. I'm also the designer of the original Clarus Q-Link.
Well, John, you've been waiting for a long time for someone to confirm about these particular these components. Do you have a question?
Oh, I was curious, would you remember the number on it? There's a
4,005 and 4,006.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll see if I got some. I used to have crates of the old ones.
Yeah.
In here somewhere.
Only the old ones. The new ones don't do it.
No, they don't. They don't do anything, really.
What's the difference between the old ones and the new ones? What's the component makeup that makes them different?
Well, it was the purity of the germanium.
Uh-huh.
And then sometimes it was the contaminants in the germanium. So you got two different effects. If you didn't have, real pure germanium. So that's some of the stuff that I've been working with. Bill's written a couple of my patents dealing with crystals and how to put memory or intent into liquids.
Well, I've seen the experiments where they've taken pond water, they've put them in little jars, they've lined them up, they've put little labels on them like love and hate and, revenge, and they would focus their thoughts on this, and they would look at the molecules before and after over a period of time. All the molecules and the elements of the water were all the same in the beginning of the experiment. At the end, the ones that were focused on with love and different words had these beautiful patterns to them. The ones that you focused hate energy or negative energy onto or just thought had completely obscure, strange, dark, weird patterns, and it was an actual laboratory experiment that had some major weight to it. I mean, it's under the same lines of thinking, isn't it?
I think so.
I have an actress friend, Sandy Fox. She's got a company. She got H2 Ohm water. She sends me a case once in a while, and I did some levitation with it. And she goes into her husband is Lex Lane. They go into going into the Green Hollywood situation.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the best water I ever drank. I don't have any left now.
What was the name of it?
It's called H2 Ohm Water.
H2 Ohm Water.
www.h2ohmwater.com. And it's Sandy Fox and Lex Lane.
I think I've heard of it, actually. I think I've heard of it.
Well, one of the problems that we ran into on the intense situation was Bill tried to explain to people that when their concept of how they think an experiment is going to turn out
mm-hmm.
can affect the electronics that's used in the experimentation itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you build a machine and you have an individual who has the ability to set his personality aside and realizes that he can create, or some people don't even realize that they can do it, then they think the machine is what is programming the water, and then all of a sudden when they die, and I've seen three or four of this happen, people spend millions of dollars on marketing, and then when the person dies, all of the product goes dead.
Really?
Yeah. And so
it's kind of the ghost in the machine, in a sense.
Yeah, and so it's something that people have to take under consideration, that they have to give the machine to someone else, and they do not tell them when they're activating it or what they're making with it, and then try to duplicate the process without that person's mind being involved.
I love it. I absolutely love it. All right, caller, thank you. We're running quickly out of time, but thank you so much.
Well, I enjoyed it. This is the first time I've ever done this.
Oh, really? Well, do it again.
My site is greatspiritearth.com.
Greatspiritearth.com. Got it. And actually, I have a feeling one of my producers may be contacting you soon. So, greatspiritearth.com. Thank you so much, caller.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Have a good night. All right, we got about 5 minutes left here, John. So again, give your contact and your website information, your blog information out there for anybody that wants to come visit you and read all about everything you've got going on or is coming up here in the next year.
Okay, for sure. It's my blogger is Waiting on the Edge of Forever, and if you Google search that out, it'll pop up all over the place, or http://johnkhutchison.blogspot.com, and you'll go there and you'll see, just click on my profile, and I have all kinds of different things there. I'm sure you'll find it interesting, intriguing, and funny, and crazy, and actually quite helpful to you folks out there.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I'm pretty sure that you're going to be added to the yes, you are. You're going to be added to the links and to our guest profiles and everything, along with the archive of this particular program. It'll be actually all happening this weekend. All our archives and everything else is going to be uploaded. I'll tell you all about that here in a moment. John, thank you so much for being on. It was absolutely a pleasure having you on, and I'd like to do it again sometime real soon.
I look forward to it, and you're a fantastic host, and I enjoyed every second of it.
Fantastic. Well, I appreciate it. Go get some sleep, and I'll be talking with you soon.
Take care, man.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
There you go. John Hutchison was my guest. There you go. John Hutchison was my guest. He's a fascinating guy. I really, really enjoyed that that bit with John. All right, what do we have else? What else do we have going on? We have quite a bit, actually, and we're going to, like I said, we're going to have all the information up on our website. We're going to have all the archives and everything else going on. So be sure to check out the website. WPRTRadio.com is the website you go to. Lots of great stuff up there. Register, become a member, and you'll have access to the archives. Now, here, there's something that we've actually added, it's new, it's blank, and if you have the opportunity to do it, do it. We're running a little contest for the month of April with the most amazing photographs. If it's one that you find or it's one that you have yourself, I don't care what it is. The categories are up there. If you're a registered member, you can submit a photograph. If at the end of April, if your photograph that you sent under whatever category is has the highest rating, you're going to get a complete box set of all of our archives, which includes Stan Friedman, Jose Escamilla, Dr. Michio Kaku, John Hutchinson, and so many more. A complete box set of the CDs and, you know, maybe some extra stuff thrown in there. So take advantage of that. Add to interesting photograph archive on our website. Again, the website address is WPRTradio.com. We are coming to a close, but tomorrow night we're going to have Paul Dale Roberts on from HPI Paranormal. He is our ghost writer. He's a demonologist, and he's got some fantastic stories. We're going to be sitting down and talking with him tomorrow night, and anytime that we have Paul on, it proves to be a very, very interesting night when it comes to demonology, UFOs, time travel, a wide variety of subjects. Nothing is left untouched. That's tomorrow night, starting at the exact same time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, until the witching hour, which is about 5 seconds. So, good morning to everyone on the East Coast. And don't worry, Friday's coming. We'll see ya. Good night. Hasta la vista. Sayonara. Bueno, bye. And as always, send me stuff. Captain Jack at WPRTRadio.com. Good night.
UFO sightings in 2007. 854 abductions by aliens or unknown species reported by American and British citizens.